The MCAP Podcast, session number 191. A collaboration between the medical school headquarters and Next Step Test Prep, the MCAP Podcast is here to make sure you have the information you need to succeed on your MCAT test day. We all know that the MCAT is one of the biggest hurdles you'll face as a pre-med, and we're here to give you the motivation and information that you need to know to help get you the score you deserve so you can one day call yourself a physician. Welcome to the MCAT Podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, your host here every week. As always, I'm joined by Phil from Blueprint MCAT, formerly Next Step Test Prep. And let me tell you, if you are in the market for full-length exams for the MCAT, you need Blueprint MCAT exams. You really need the AAMC exams. And if you need more, Blueprint is the next place to go. Informal poll on Reddit shows that students love Blueprint exams. Again, formerly Next Step Test Prep, so you'll see students talking about Next Step a lot on Reddit, but Blueprint is their name. Don't forget it. Students love Blueprint exams. They mimic the real tests the best. They mimic kind of the scoring the best. They have a ton of data because so many students use Blueprint exams. Again, go check them out. blueprintprep.com. We're going to continue our discussion and breakdown of one of those full lengths, actually full length one, which you can get for free by going to blueprintprep.com and get that exam. Let's go ahead and jump in, and we're going to continue our breakdown of our Chem Phys section, passage 7. Phil, back for some more MCAT podcast. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. I managed to avoid all the combustion reactions of the 4th of July. didn't get burned physically, you know, avoiding the corona, avoiding the, you know, explosives.
Yeah.
It's this fine boundary. I pretend like I don't actually just love fireworks. I personally, like, I'm all about it. I like sold fireworks for a job for years, but
nice.
Now I'm pretending to be an upstanding citizen.
I'm interested to see, since so many fireworks shows were shut down this year and so many people went and bought their own fireworks. I mean, it was crazy seeing, even here in Boulder in Colorado, just amazing, just like fireworks everywhere. I'd be interested to see. I haven't seen any reports on ER visits and amputations with fingers and stuff like that, which are always an issue on 4th of July, but I'd assume even more so this year just because everyone went rogue.
This is self-fireworking, yeah. St. Patty's Day and 4th of July. Those are the busy days.
Yep.
in the ER.
Yep. Cool. All right. So we're continuing Blueprint MCAT, formerly Next Step Test Prep. We're continuing full length one, which students can get for free by going to blueprintprep.com and getting all of those free goodies. We're continuing our breakdown here of the Chem Phys section, running on into passage 7.
Yeah, we're over the halfway point. So just kind of like keep ticking along. I'm going to be sad when we get out of the chemistry physics because that's my favorite stuff. But we got more good stuff coming up.
Nice.
But yeah. So we have this passage here about neurotoxins, latharism. So why don't we go ahead and just kind of like hop right in, you know, not dawdle, and see where this goes.
Let's go.
So latharism is one of the oldest known neurotoxic diseases and results from excessive consumption of the chickling pea, Lathyrus sativus. The disease is primarily restricted to India, Bangladesh, and Ethiopia, and is relatively common in communities suffering from poverty and malnutrition, where few other food options are available. L-sativus has been shown to contain the neurotoxic amino acid beta-N-oxalyl A, beta-diaminopropionic acid, or beta-ODAP. A lot easier way to say that.
Beta ODAP. That's cool.
Beta ODAP, which is suspected to induce neurotoxic effects by serving as a structural analog of glutamate, the major excitatory neurotransmitter of the central nervous system. Couple of things going on in my brain as I'm reading through this. Alarm bells are going off about amino acids, right?
Yep.
They're awaiting this to glutamate, and they say that this is a neurotoxic amino acid. And so amino acids are the single highest yield thing I can think of on test day, so we always care a ton about that. And then we're also talking about neuro stuff, so neurotransmitters and glutamate, which is kind of got this double duty as both a neurotransmitter and an amino acid. Important to know that those are not mutually exclusive. So it's both an amino acid and a neurotransmitter. And this thing is also that and tends to inhibit this glutamate.
Okay.
So we have some structure here. We got the glutamate. We got the beta ODAP. I'm not even going to try to say that again.
They look similar at glance.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of overall, they're definitely going to ask us some questions about these structures. It's hard to predict what that's going to be until we see the question, but that's something we can kind of see coming down the pipeline.
Yep.
So a group of scientists in India hypothesized that sulfur-containing amino acids have a protective effects against beta-ODAP toxicity after observing that populations with sulfur-deficient diets appear to be predisposed to more severe neurologic degradation after eating L. sativus. Note that they don't tell us what amino acids were sulfur-containing. They just say, these sulfur-containing amino acids, I can see a question coming. They're going to be asking about that. Mm. Which ones contain sulfur? There's two of them. We'll hold off on that until we see a question, hopefully. So to investigate the physiologic response to beta-ODAP consumption, the researchers brought in three healthy volunteers whose diets were considered to be rich in sulfur. The volunteers were instructed to fast for 12 hours and then given 150 grams of cooked L. sativus seeds to eat. This seems like, I don't know if they do this in the U.S. where we like, well, this thing's a neurotoxin. We're going to just like feed some people.
Phil, do you not know of our great water experiment? They're giving us a neurotoxin every day with fluoride.
Oh, that's right. Yes, of course. So continuing on, the volunteers' plasma concentrations of methionine were recorded every hour. After 10 hours, the volunteers were provided a meal with several whole eggs, which each contained approximately 400 milligrams of methionine per 100 grams of weight. Three more hourly measurements were recorded, as well as a measurement at time equals 24 hours. The results of their study can be found in figure two. And then we got figure two, which shows us some of this like time frame here. So what are your thoughts kind of like just looking at the graph overall?
So plasma concentration of methionine, as I'm looking at this, I'm given the seeds, my plasma concentration precipitously goes down, right? After those seeds levels off a little bit, they give me some food, which has methionine in it, and then it goes up, but not up to my baseline. So it'd be interesting to see how much longer it takes to get back up to that baseline. So you can potentially extrapolate from here that if I'm having these L. sativus seeds every day and not replacing with my methionine, that my methionine is going down and down and down and down and down, potentially.
Right, exactly, which is not going to be good. You know, with an amino acid, we need to do stuff,
yep.
Build proteins. So noticing that the meal, like it says in the passage that the meal had like 400 milligrams of methionine per 100 grams of eggs, and we were given like multiple eggs here. So I expect like the methionine should go up, right? We're eating a lot of eggs rich in methionine. Methionine levels still tend to stay pretty low, especially when you factor in the confidence intervals. So those like little bars, everyone's always kind of like confused about.
Yep.
The only way I can ever really explain this perfectly is to talk about like fishing stories, right? Like my sister calls and tells me like, I caught a 70-pound fish. And then my dad calls and says, your sister caught an 80-pound fish. My brother calls and says, your sister caught a 65-pound fish. I know this fish was not 2 pounds.
Yep.
But it's probably somewhere between 50 and 80, right? Like it's somewhere in that range, right?
That's where I'm not confident.
Exactly where it's at. Yeah, I'm confident it's in that range.
Yeah.
So noticing that like the number's somewhere in this range. I don't know where, but it's somewhere in this range. And so it's the same for all of these confidence intervals, which means that it is possible that from like 6 hours to 25 hours, it could have stayed the same or could have even gone down. I know that number is somewhere in that confidence interval, but I don't know where it is.
Yeah.
So it's possible that it dropped over time. I cannot say it went up. I can't say it went down. I can't say anything really. Okay. I just know that it did go down from the initial part. So I take the seeds, it drops, I eat the eggs. I can't say for certain that it goes up. It seems to still be pretty low after that. Okay. So confidence intervals are a little bit of a thorn in the side of a student where they want to look and be like really precise.
Okay.
So that finishes up the passage. So we have this question 35. Latharism is known to target and degrade collagen in the lower limbs. Which pair of amino acids would best provide disulfide links to stabilize the folded form of collagen?
There's the sulfur question. Yeah?
Yeah.
So this is where you need to know your amino acids inside and out. You need to know the single letter, the three-digit letter, everything.
Yeah. So single-digit codes that give everyone a little bit of a hard time.
Yep. Yeah. I don't remember my amino acids well enough to remember what's going on here.
Yeah, I feel like I had to like memorize like binge and purge. I like memorized them and I forgot them like 4 or 5 times during my life.
Yep.
At this point, they're like well integrated. But so C is going to be cysteine. M is going to be methionine, which they talked about a lot in the passage. And then S is going to be serine.
Mm-hmm.
The serine thing is a trap because they're asking about disulfide linkages. So you're thinking like, oh, two sulfurs. And then you see answer choice D, which is serine and serine. And that looks like sulfur and sulfur, but that's not what that's saying.
Yeah.
Serine just has like an alcohol group on it. It doesn't have a sulfur in it. But cysteine and methionine both have sulfurs in them. The methionine has a sulfur and then a methyl group, which is just like a carbon sticking off of it. The cysteine has a thiol, which is a sulfur with a hydrogen. The names are based off of like alcohols. And so an alcohol would be OH, a thiol would be a sulfur version. So instead of the oxygen, it's a sulfur. There's also a thioether, which is just like an ether, only it's a sulfur instead of the oxygen. So looking at this, basically you just have to take away that, and you have to know this, right? Like you got to know these amino acids forwards, backwards, sideways. And you got to know that the only amino acids that can do disulfide bridges are cysteines. And so the answer is just going to be A from this point. Cysteine, that's where we get all of our disulfide bridges.
And that's just, you just have to know that, period.
Yeah, just have to know that. Like, honestly, when it comes to topics on the MCAT, students will ask me, like, am I going to have, like, questions on the kidney? I'm like, maybe, maybe not. Who knows? Yeah. You're going to get amino acid questions. You're going to get, like, 5 or 6 or 8 of them.
Yeah.
So it's definitely the highest yield thing I can always think of. Whenever a student asks me, like, what should I be studying? My first answer is, do you know your amino acids? Because that's something you need to know.
Yeah. So here's a question for you. So this question at the end of the day is a pseudo-discrete, right? It's saying disulfide links, where do you get them from? What amino acids? In my Facebook group recently, someone posted, oh my gosh, guys, someone recommended that in ChemPhys, specifically ChemPhys, not the other sections, but specifically ChemPhys, don't read the passages, go straight to the questions, find the answer if you need to in the passage, but don't read the passages, they're a waste of time. And she posted that, and she said, I tried it for the first time, my score went up 5 points from the highest I've ever scored before.
That could be the case. That's something that I don't know if that's going to happen with every student. She said, like, within that, like, oh, it's a waste of time to read the passage. If timing is your issue, I actually think that that's an acceptable strategy in the sciences because there are questions that you need to know from outside and you just, like, it's a pseudo-discrete. However, if you have the time, there are going to be some questions that you do have to get from the passage. And so just completely skipping the passage, I don't know if I can, like, completely endorse that. That's definitely not a way to get a 528. But if you're only answering like 2/3 of the questions because you don't have time to get to the other third, then maybe that strategy actually would be beneficial to you. I want to be really clear. Only in the sciences would that even be possible. In the cars section, they're asking you, like, what did the passage say? And so you have to read the passage to answer those.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Next
it's
question.
Something I talk about with my students pretty frequently.
Yeah.
To just be like, you know, if you're like crammed on time, you have like 5 minutes left and a passage left, try to answer the questions without reading the passage.
Yeah.
It's a good plan B.
All right, question 36 here. Which of the following correctly identifies a chiral center in beta ODAP? That's fun to say.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot, right. lot more fun than the other name.
Yes. And so obviously, if you're listening to this on the podcast, it's kind of hard to see all of these episodes that we're doing for Full Length One. We're recording as well for YouTube. So go check out YouTube. You can see these things, these structures here. And we're looking at this beta ODAP structure from figure one of the passage with different arrows pointing to the different, I don't know what you call those, different what? I don't know.
I just say different carbons or atoms.
Yeah. Different carbons here. So answer choice A. We have the arrow pointing to this carbon that's attached to the double bond oxygen and the alcohol group. Answer choice B, arrows pointing to this NH2 amino. Is that what it is? Amino group?
Amino. Note that every amino acid has that amino group, which is why it's called an amino acid. Uh-huh. It's also got that carboxylic acid, the C double bond OOH on the far right. So that's why they're called amino acids, because they all have an amino group and a carboxylic acid and then some other thing as its R group.
Okay. Answer choice C is the glutamate, which is interesting. So that seems to be a an outlier. Like, wait, that's not even the right molecule that they're asking
right,
me about.
Exactly.
So
easy to throw that one out.
Yeah. All right. So I got 75% chance now. And then answer choice D, it's pointing that. Yeah. So that's pointing to the carbon in the middle. That is in the middle. I don't know. So chiral center. So chiral is, that's where you have like the left and right where things are like mirror images, right?
Yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson and Samuel D. Jackson or whatever those, I love that meme. So the question is, where is the mirror image? If I rotate it around, where's the mirror image?
So not just a mirror image, but something that is capable of having a mirror image and being a different molecule, like switching from the R to the S.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to have to be a carbon that's attached to four different groups. Because if it's attached to just three things, it's not a, or like two of the things are the same, then it's not going to be a chiral center.
So chiral center, I know we've covered this a ton and it's always good to just continue beating it in. Look for the atom that's attached to four different things.
Right, right. There's also another shortcut that I think we've mentioned before.
We've mentioned if it has that little dotted lines on it, on the...
Yeah, the dashes or the wedges.
Yes. But here, although this has the wedges because it's on there. So if it's a wedge, then... It would be answer choice B because the wedge is attached to this amino group, the amino. Answer choice C is attached to the amino too, but that's the wrong molecule. So that's kind of you're trying to trick someone into picking C. So I would go with B. I forgot about that trick with the wedges.
Yeah, the dashes and the wedges. I don't know why the AAMC does it, but they do it all the time. They leave in the dashes and wedges and ask you what's chiral, and you're like, the one with the dash or the wedge. Because that's the only reason you would ever show a dash or a wedge is if it's important, if it's coming towards you or away from you, which means it's a chiral center.
Okay.
Answer choice A is that carbon is connected to three things because one of them is a double bond. So it's only connected to three things.
Yep.
D is connected to four things, but two of them are hydrogens.
Yep.
So they're the same. So we can eliminate that.
Okay.
Yep.
I would have gotten to that answer without the dash and the wedge. Okay. 37. Go ahead.
So the meal that the scientists provided to each of the volunteers at time 10 hours contained 5 eggs weighing 50 grams each. Approximately how much methionine was served to each volunteer? So we got 10 milligrams, 1,000 milligrams, 3,000 milligrams, and 62,500.
62,500. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 10 hours. So time equals 10. I don't think that time really matters. We are told that each egg contains 400 milligrams per 100 grams of weight. So that's in the passage. So it's just something I remember that was there. So five eggs is 250 grams of egg. And so we would take the 400 times 2.5 and end up with about 1,000, right? Or 1,000.
Yeah.
So answer choice B.
Yep. Very good. Just some straight stoichiometry. Also, that's a pretty big meal, five egg omelet. Those guys are full.
They're bodybuilders.
Yeah, exactly.
Raw.
Yeah,
they ate them raw too. Just drank them. Cool. So pretty straightforward. And this is one potentially, right? If you don't read the passage, you go, okay, wait, five eggs, 50 grams each. And then you just go, you look for 100 gram, 400 milligram. You just try to find
those things. Yeah, you got to have some conversion factor somewhere in the passage.
Yep. Okay. Question 38. The data presented in figure 2, which is this graph here, most strongly supports which conclusion? A, beta-ODAP effects on plasma methionine levels are strongest at the T equals 2 to T equals 3 hour mark, so T equals time, obviously. B, the sulfur-rich meal demonstrated no significant effect on elevating plasma methionine levels to baseline. C, the largest increase in methionine plasma levels after the sulfur-rich meal occurred between hours 11 and 12. And D, the active compound in L. sativus seeds has a biological half-life of 1 hour. So, which answer choice most strongly supports. So some of them may be a little bit true and yeah, maybe it lends to that, but which one most strongly supports? So that's, I always try to make sure I'm answering the right question, not trying to trick me up here.
Right.
So beta ODAP effects on plasma methionine levels, which is basically what this graph is, are strongest at 2 to 3 hour mark. And so looking at it, there's a precipitous drop in the methionine levels around that time. So that seems like a good answer, right? That's correct, but is it the most strongly supported? B, the sulfur-rich meal demonstrated no significant effect on elevating plasma methionine levels to baseline. I would say that seems correct as well. But again, if we went out to 30 hours, maybe there's a huge increase and it just took longer to to digest. So maybe it looks true right now, but does it really support that? I don't know. C, the largest increase in methionine plasma levels after the sulfur-rich meal occurred between hours 11 and 12. And there is a little bit of a spike there, but there's a much bigger increase, although it just takes a longer time over the course of that first 24 hours or the 10 hours or so after that. So I don't know if that is really supported. And then D, the active compound in L. sativa seeds has a biological half-life of 1 hour. I don't know how that's supported at all. Obviously, it's working a lot after that. So I would go with A, just because A seems to be the most drastic, right? The strongest drop in that methionine is that kind of 2 to 3 hour mark.
Yeah, that's when we're getting this drop. The thing is, the drop continues for a while.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we never get back to baseline anywhere in the figure. Mm-hmm. And so we're not certain that, like, this, like, is weaker at 4 hours or 5 hours, because it's still low at that point. We would need to see, like, oh, it drops and it's really low at 2 to 3 hours and then starts to creep up after that. And then I would be like, oh yeah, these seeds are dropping this. And then the L. sativus is like going away. And so our methionine levels are creeping back up. But we can tell that, like, that like meal full of methionine, that didn't really elevate our methionine levels that much. So we can't, we can't say that, like, oh, this only had an effect, or its strongest effect was at the 2 to 3 hours, because it seems like we're still having an effect, you know, a day later. We're never, like, getting back to that same level. Which is also the same reason you'd kind of want to eliminate D as well, because we have no idea what the half-life is on this. They don't give us any information. We'd need all sorts of extra data to figure out affinities and kcats of the enzymes and all this crazy stuff, and they don't give us any of those things. So we're safe eliminating that. So, which kind of takes us down to B and C. Looking at C, the tricky bit here is these confidence intervals, right? So going from like hour 6 to hour 25, it could have actually dropped in that window because of the way the confidence intervals are set up. At like hour 6, it looks like it's somewhere between, you know, 7 hours and 13 hours. Milligrams of methionine. It could be 7. It could be 13. It's somewhere in there. I'm not really sure. I know it's between those two, but I don't know where it is. It could have been at 12. Yep. And then at 25 hours, it could have been at 9. And we just can't really say anything about this. Yep. So the only thing we can say is that it seems like there wasn't that significant of an effect because confidence intervals stay overlapped. So the correct answer for this one's going to be B. That confidence interval stuff gives everyone a hard time because it looks like it goes up. It looks like it goes down. But like looking at those areas and the confidence intervals, I can't really make any claims about anything going on from 5 hours to 25 hours because none of the confidence intervals overlap. Or they all overlap.
Okay. Okay. That's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit tricky. Data can be a little misleading if you just look at just the points on the graph instead of the confidence intervals.
Yeah.
Okay. So this takes us to 39. So the researchers originally wanted to recruit additional volunteers with sulfur-deficient diets for this study. What is the most likely reason this request was refused? So it's difficult to find patients with sulfur-poor diets in the area the study was conducted. The researchers found many willing participants who had sulfur-rich diets, and it therefore seemed appropriate for that to be the focus. The mechanism of how L. sativus affects sulfur-deficient patients is already clear, and the health risks of providing L. sativus to sulfur-deficient patients were too high.
I think it seems pretty obvious the answer choice D, right? It's just from a moral and ethical standpoint, be like, yeah, we don't want to kill our patients.
Right. The L-sativus makes your levels of methionine drop, the levels of like sulfur-containing amino acids drop. If you're already low, that's going to be a more severe problem. Yeah. The other ones don't really make sense that much either anyway. It's difficult to find patients with a sulfur-poor diet. That's not really a good reason to just like say like, oh, you know, I'm trying to study this disease, but I have a hard time finding people with the disease, so I'm just not going to study it.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's not a very, you know, sound reasoning. And also B, like the researchers found many willing participants that had sulfur-rich diets, right? Yeah. Like most of the people who wanted to be in my study didn't have diabetes, so I'm only studying people who don't have diabetes for my diabetes medication, right? Yeah. Like that doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense
either. But
so
the risk
C
could be pretty severe.
C is like the potential one that I think a lot of students will pick because it's like, oh, the mechanism of how it affects sulfur deficient patients is already clear. And students will jump at that because we can see in the chart that L-sativus does hurt sulfur deficient patients,
right.
But we don't know the mechanism of that. Right. And so we know it happens, but we don't know why, which is a lot of things in medicine. And so answer choice C is the kind of tricky one here.
Yeah. That also kind of asks the question of like, if we're already really clear on all the mechanisms, then why are we studying it in the first place?
Yeah.
Right. Like, obviously we're doing research on these seeds and like, maybe we should figure out like the only reason we're doing it is because we need to figure out more about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's work on growing other seeds that,
right.
other beans that don't kill people. Okay, cool. And then that's it.
That's it for that passage. Moving on to one of my favorite passages of this exam next.
All right, so there you have it. Passage 7, full-length one from Blueprint MCAT. Again, blueprintprep.com/MCAT. You can sign up for a diagnostic, the first full-length, which is what we're covering here on the podcast, for free, as well as some other goodies. BlueprintPrep.com/MCAT. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the MCAT podcast.
This is MedEd Media.